Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So when I was younger, and I've been still a little bit, I always wanted curly hair. I had very thick, very straight hair, and I wanted those big curls that some of you come by naturally. And I tried everything. I tried curling irons, I tried hot rollers, I even tried a very ill-advised perm. But nothing worked. And finally, I had a hair salon person tell me I must have been in my mid-teens. She said, "All right, let's be real. You're never going to have curls. So what else can we do with your hair that will make you happy?" And I really appreciated her honesty, right? She could have kept fleecing me for all that perm money that just looked bad. But she just said, "Let's be real. This is your hair. This is what we've got to work with." And since then, I've used and thought that phrase many times. Let's be real, right? Let's just look at the situation for the situation it is. But then here's the other part of it, right? Let's be real. And then what did the woman say to me? "And now let's figure out what to do with your hair." So we don't just stop in the "let's be real." We move on to what we can then do to make the situation better, or more appealing, or more joy-filled, or more hope-filled. What is real after all? I kept thinking about that as I read the story for today. Let's be real. For these apostles in the story for today, their reality had been shaken. And they are locked away in a room. What they thought was real was that Jesus was coming into the world to overthrow the government so they wouldn't be an oppressed people anymore. And that didn't happen. And what really happened was Jesus was crucified. The person they thought they would save them died, hung on a cross, tortured and humiliated. That was real. And so now they're locked away. And they probably have very real reasons to be afraid, because now the body is missing. And it could be bad enough if they were associated with him before, but now if they think that they stole a body or there were some other shenanigans afoot, they have real reason to be afraid. And there they are, locked in there, but locked, unable to go out and see what else the world might have in store for them. The real was keeping them trapped. Now, all except Thomas. Poor Thomas. It's always the Sunday after Easter, we always read Doubting Thomas. And he's got this moniker, right? Even if you don't go to church, people know Doubting Thomas. They call people Doubting Thomas. I saw a cartoon recently, and it had Thomas and Peter, and one of the other disciples, but I can't remember. But it's Thomas saying to Peter, "Nobody calls you denying Peter every time they say your name, right?" But for some reason, he gets to be Doubting Thomas. But I started thinking about Thomas. And Thomas is an interesting character. He is not unfaithful. In all of the rest of the gospel, he is following Jesus very closely. He goes with Jesus to Lazarus to raise Lazarus from the tomb, even though there are people who thought it was a bad idea. But Thomas is an I'm-on-the-facts kind of guy. He's our realist, if you would. And so there's a story, one of the stories of Jesus, and when Jesus is saying to all of his disciples, "You cannot go where I am going." And like when Jesus spoke a lot of times, nobody had any idea what he was talking about. But none of the disciples say anything to him. They just sit there like, okay, just act like you know what he's talking about. But not Thomas. Thomas says to him, "Jesus, we don't know where you're going, so how are we supposed to follow you if we don't know?" Thomas wants the facts. He wants to know what's real. And when he shows up, he only wants to see what everybody else got to see. They got to see Jesus. And if we're realistic, we want that too. We want visual proof. I was once in my chaplaincy. I had a husband and wife whose son had been killed in a very tragic car accident. And the husband had already identified the body. And so he was trying to spare his wife. And she said, "I want to see the body." And he said, "No, I don't want you to see the body. You shouldn't see the body because it was not pretty." And the wife said, "You don't understand. I have to see the body or I won't believe it's real." We need to see things to believe them. This woman, her son's death was so tragic and so awful that unless she saw it, she could not even begin to fathom that it was real. The same is for the resurrection of Jesus. I mean, this is a good thing, right? It's not the death, it's the resurrection, but it's so out of our realm. Of course Thomas wanted to see it, to believe that it is real. We want to know and see what is real. But then the question is, what does reality do to us? Does it keep us like those disciples locked in a room? Tom Long often says these disciples are the church at its worst. They are scared and scarred and disheartened and locked up with nobody to share the story with. They won't go out. And so often, I think that's what, when we're being real, happens to us. We just stay in that one little space. It's true in the church. It's true in many institutions these days. The church, it is true, is in decline number-wise. Fewer people come to church than they used to. And so often in church leadership, what we like to do then, what members and church leaders do, is we think, "Oh no, we're in decline," and we panic and we bunker up. And we don't think about how God might be asking us or calling us into something new. To think about new ways we might do things. To think about how God might be doing something new through the people that are still showing up and even the people that aren't. We as a church bunker. And yet Jesus in the story for today shows us that that's not what we're called to do. Because God always supplies a new reality. Always gives new possibilities. He comes into that locked room where people are trapped in what they think is real and says, "Wait a minute, I'm here. Peace be with you." And he blows on them the Holy Spirit and he tells them to go out into the world. That is what we are called to, seeing new visions, imagining new possibilities, believing even when we can't because the facts don't weigh it out, that God is at work in some way in the world. I think sometimes people see the church in our culture, and what church signifies to them is some old institution that's just holding on to itself. And in some ways, we are that way. And it's hard to get a vision of what God could be doing. It's hard to see or know what God does. It's so funny in the church, in individual tasks. You know, we have stuff that needs to be done. And sometimes there aren't the people to do it, or it's not going to get done in the same way that it's always been done. And I have these conversations with people, and they'll say, "Well, we don't know, Pastor, how it's going to get done, what's going to happen?" And I say, "Well, is there a different way we could do it? Is there another way of doing it than the way we've always been doing it?" And I get blank stares, right? Blank stares, not because people are trying not to move forward, just because it's so hard for us to think beyond what's been real for us in the past. It's true in the church. And don't hear me say that I don't like tradition. Tradition is important, and the things that have come before us are important. But so is vision and possibility and ideas of new things. So often we get in our own way we lock ourselves in the rooms. So it's true in the church, It's true in other institutions. I went to a town meeting recently. They're trying to kind of renew downtown Mount Kisco, and I went to a town planning meeting. And it was so interesting because they've got these planners and all these great ideas. They looked lovely. And one person stood up and said, well, that's great, but the reality is that there's one or two landlords who own most of the stuff down here, and they just won't let people in because they put the rents too high. So what are we supposed to do? Now, that's real. That's true. That is a problem in downtown Mount Kisco. But if we stopped there, if we did say, okay, that's reality, now what do we do with the space we do have and the land we do own, what would ever happen? Right? You have to look beyond. We have to look beyond as the church, as the community, in our own lives. Because the truth is, everything I'm saying about the church and our community is true in our own lives. How many of us get stuck in the way we think things have to be? In the way we think things always have been or are, and can't dream or see new possibilities for our own lives. We do it all the time. Life knocks us down. And I have said it myself, and I hear other people say it. It's a great line right now. People say, well, it is what it is. All right. It is what it is. But what could it be? As Christians, we are called to look beyond what is to see what God can do. But it is so hard. I was once in a conversation with a woman who'd been in just a string of bad relationships. You know, maybe you've been there. Maybe you love somebody who's been there. But it was man who treated her badly after man who treated her badly after man who treated her badly. And she had just come out of a... Not long ago, she had come out of an abusive marriage. And she happened, after some time, to find herself in a very healthy relationship. And it was so interesting because we were sitting having coffee and she said to me, I never imagined somebody could treat me this well. I never imagined. Because her reality for year after year was being treated poorly. Was being treated like a battering ram. She never thought it could be different. But God tells us it can be different. There are still realities that we need to face. But the question is, in the midst of those realities, how do we believe in the promises of God? I want you to ask yourself today, like the disciples were, what rooms are you locked in? Where are places in your life where you have stopped seeing possibilities? Where you have stopped believing God can or will do something good? Where are those places for you? It might be work. It might be a family situation. It might be your own self-image. Who knows? But we lock ourselves in those little rooms all the time because of reality without giving God a chance to show us what can be. We are called as people of God to think beyond what is, to dream and to do. There's a great saying. I just read it recently. It said, the world needs dreamers and the world needs doers. But most of all, the world needs dreamers who do. And as Christians, that is what we are called to be, dreamers who do. Because those disciples, once Jesus came to them, and notice this, I love this about the story. Jesus didn't kind of politely knock on the door and say, hello, you know, is anybody home? I'd like to come in and show myself. Jesus just busted into their room. And that's what God will do for us. God will come into our locked places where we are afraid, where we are uncertain, where we have no vision. But then the choice becomes, will we pay attention? And will we listen? And will we dream and believe with God? Those disciples could have stayed in that room. They could have stayed there, spent their whole rest of their life there. And where would the church be then? But they listened to the dreams of God, and they went out into the world and they shared them. Because that was not all there was. And whatever is holding you down in your life,